This is One Universe at a Time. I'm Brian Korberline. 3D animation is captivating, and so are semi-realistic dolls and robots that sort of look like people. As these things get more and more lifelike, there's a point where they stop looking cuddly and start looking creepy. In pop culture, this is called the Uncanny Valley. On our show today is Dr. Grant Guthiel. He's an associate professor of psychology at Nazareth College in Rochester, New York. He's going to explain to us why we get repulsed by that which almost looks like us. The Uncanny Valley, this is one of those things that fascinates me, because it seems to me that a lot of modern horror movies, with all the rise in zombies and vampires and things like that, they're really kind of capitalizing on two things. One is predation. We don't want to be eaten.
Right.
And the other one is this uncanny valley, things that are unholy or not human or things like that. And I notice that when I see certain robots, for example.
Right.
Like the robots that are not quite right. And you really do kind of have this attitude of, I need to kill it with fire.
Yep.
So is that just an impression? Is that something cultural or is it a real effect?
It depends on what you mean by real.
Okay.
But is there quantifiable, empirical, 15 studies in a row saying, oh my God, you know, the Uncanny Valley is a real thing? No, that stuff doesn't exist. But
really? You're saying there isn't research on the Uncanny Valley?
I am saying there is not empirical research validating the existence of the Uncanny Valley to the extent that you would like to say, yep, that's real.
Okay.
There's a lot of talk about what could be causing it, why it might be real. And if we're going to talk about it, the thing I would say is, yep, it's real. I mean, you know it's real. That reaction you have,
at the bottom of
you feel
spine.
It's crawling right up the back of your head. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's real. Where that comes from is a different question. What's causing it's a different question. But that's the cool thing about my business. You feel it? It's real. There's a phenomenon worth talking about.
Okay.
So in that sense, oh yeah, it's real.
So what would cause it then? What do you think causes it?
There are several different ideas, but I think it's a combination of a couple of things. There is that notion of predation, for one thing. So the Army's got essentially a cargo robot that it's been working on. That is essentially a torso with four legs that can carry god-awful amounts of crap. It's a beautiful thing. You watch this thing run, it's terrifying. It doesn't have a head, it doesn't have a face, it's got no teeth, but it moves like the biggest, meanest, ugliest cat you ever saw in your life.
For me, it was when it slipped on ice. It's like, oh, it's just walking, it's walking. Yeah. That's cool. It slipped on ice. Oh my, kill that thing.
Yeah, it's that's a terrifying thing.
Yeah.
But it's a lot broader than that. I mean, the Japanese guy who came up with the notion was really onto something, I think, for a couple of reasons. Beyond that, oh my God, this scares me. There's just a simple, broad thing in human cognition. We hate being wrong, and we hate being uncertain.
Right.
So both those things. So the technical term for a lot of this is cognitive dissonance. So I know what I know, don't confuse me with the facts.
Right.
Couple that with something called categorical perception. All right.
Okay.
Now, in the real world, things are not categorical. In the real world, they're continuous.
Right. So we like putting them in boxes.
We have to. We don't even like to. It's what we do. It's who we are.
Okay.
So there's a classic study in this is visual perception of pictures. You start with a picture of Ronald Reagan. You got a picture at the other end of the continuum of Bill Clinton.
Right.
And through the magic of mathematics, you just do a 5% change from Reagan to Clinton.
From one to the other.
And you get categorical perception. There is a point at which, okay, Reagan, Clinton.
Okay.
Done. That's how we like things to work. It makes us happy. Now, the problem with the Uncanny Valley is it doesn't work.
Right.
Robot, person. No. The Uncanny Valley is exactly that point where it's robot. Ah! Maybe person.
Right.
Maybe not. Oh, crap. What do I do? It violates categorical perception. It induces a profound level of cognitive dissonance, and we hate that.
Cognitive dissonance is something that to be avoided.
Yeah, we hate. I mean, you hate it in everything. You want to know what goes on. This is what's going to happen. This is why it's going to happen. I know the answer. I know why this works. And then either you find out you're not sure, or you find out you're wrong.
Right.
And that happens for anything, all over human cognition. We like being certain. You know this from your students. Why don't they ask questions? Because people might see I'm wrong.
I don't want to know. I don't want to be.
All right. I don't want to be that guy. And we fight against this every day.
Right.
Now, couple that with that kind of predation thing.
Right.
And you've got an incredibly powerful effect.
Something
because
inhuman is now after me.
And the way we tell what falls into the uncanny valley is pretty straightforward. A lot of it's got to do with faces. I mean, Polar Express creeped the crap out of people specifically because it's Tom Hanks. We love Tom Hanks. Oh my God, it's got shark eyes. It's terrifying. The eyes are wrong. They're just wrong. And developmentally, evolutionarily, I think, faces and especially eyes are crucially important for interacting with other things in the world. And it makes sense. If it's got a face, it's either going to eat you or feed you.
Right.
Faces are powerful.
Do you think it's related to the idea that, I mean, children prefer attractive faces over unattractive faces? Well, do you think like the uncanny valley is that's really, really not attractive to the point that it doesn't look human?
It's that you're unsure. I mean, I was reading something about this where a computer scientist or a robotic scientist said, you might be able to mess with the uncanny valley if the robot's really attractive. Mm-hmm. And that kind of gets to your point in that, okay, it looks a little creepy, but it's really hot or it's really handsome. So I'll look past creepy.
The blonde from Battlestar Galactica. Okay, fine. Everybody's okay with that.
Exactly. And the thing is, she's not in the Uncanny Valley. There is nothing robotic about that character.
Right.
Absolutely nothing.
Right.
And when it falls into the Uncanny Valley, it gets us into cognitive dissonance about something that's fundamental. Mm-hmm. Is it human? Is it safe? Will it care for me? Will it attack me? Will it eat me? Oh my God, I don't know.
Right.
And you just lose it. And you back away. You just don't want to deal. If you can go farther, and I love the fact that that's the thing that freaks me out about this. It's a valley. It's not a cliff.
Right. You edge towards,
and then there's
I'm ambivalent. No, I really don't like that. To kill it with fire.
And then yeah, trust me, there are a whole lot of people out there. I mean, the Japanese are deeply into this because they have all kinds of reasons for needing robotic support for their elderly population. I mean, a dozen different reasons.
And I think you see that a lot with the humanoid robots. They're very specifically, even though they're bipedal, they're vaguely human shaped.
Right.
They're very clearly not human, and they're very clearly friendly. I mean, the idea of them is they have a very bright colors and a friendly look to them so that I may not be human, but I am not going to hurt you.
I am your friend. I mean, Asimov's three laws of robotics, man.
Yes.
I mean, the man knew what he was talking about.
Right.
It's also a combination of different perceptual information. Mm-hmm. Faces is one part of it. Movement is another.
Yeah.
If you trick me, if it looks and sounds human, but then it moves and it goes, it does that mechanical motion, it's like, oh, you lied. And you lied about something fundamental.
Right.
You lied about life. I actually saw something a couple of days ago where, talking about the Uncanny Valley, this guy threw off like a two-line thing of, clowns are in the Uncanny Valley. Clowns are creepy.
Yeah, it's interesting that's the same type of thing.
Yeah,
I think of clowns as being friendly, but it freaks a lot of people out.
Yeah. It doesn't need to be humanoid to be friendly, and in fact, the farther it gets away from some degree, almost the better it is. I mean, Disney's done this. I can't remember which Disney movie was it. They've done the one with the hassock that's a dog, and the one with a blanket that is some kind of intentional creature that everybody loves. And everybody loves that.
Right.
No resemblance to humans whatsoever.
Right.
That's cool.
Even the Disney characters,
yeah,
they have overly large eyes, mm-hmm. almost animated,
which is completely
style.
Infantilizing. And we
exactly.
Babies are cute,
right?
That's
But they don't. They don't look like real people, no. And so the animated aspects of them are perfectly fine.
Yeah, I mean, there's a comparison I saw between, you know, I mentioned Polar Express.
Mm-hmm.
And Polar Express and The Incredibles came out exactly the same time.
Right.
Polar Express tanked.
Right.
The Incredibles made a god-awful amount of money.
Right.
The Incredibles looks like a cartoon. People were cool with that.
Right, right.
The Polar Express was, it's human, but it's not. It fell right into that notion. Right. And again, it's one part of this that's interesting for me is the degree of similarity, of overt similarity to human, doesn't matter for the anthropomorphization or the love or the caring. I mean, back during the Afghan and Iraq wars,
right.
there are a lot of bomb disposal robots. There are a lot of right. surveillance robots. And these bots were, you know, fundamental parts of squad-based right. warfare. And the guys in the units named them,
yeah.
were sure they had personalities. We're sure they had feelings. There were stories about these right. guys saying, going back to like, you know, some military robotics guy saying, you gotta fix them.
Right.
And the robotics guy's looking at it like, dude, I got a brand new one that's got updated software
no,
right
it
there.
Has to,
no,
it has to be
no,
this
no, you gotta fix Bob.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Bob. And nobody
and
saw that
do.
Coming. Yeah, and we do that
it,
constantly.
It reminds me of, there was, I think, an IKEA commercial.
I love that one!
They have this lamp, and they film the lamp with sad music.
Yes, it's in the rain, I think.
And they put it in the rain, and then the guy comes out and says, some of you feel bad for this lamp, that's because you're crazy.
Yeah.
But we do. It's
yeah.
like, that poor lamp is being abandoned. It never moves.
No.
It's just a lamp.
It's sitting there in the rain.
Music and rain, and we feel bad for a
mm-hmm.
lamp.
Yeah. And I will tell you, in that ad, it's the same kind of ad that Pixar's been using for years.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it's that big spotlighty lamp.
Right.
It moves. It's got a face and a head, and it cocks to one. It's beautiful.
As long as it moves in the same
yeah.
way. Yeah, it reminds me, when you're talking about the Uncanny Valley, you know, just a little bit off, it reminds me of experiences that you can have with young children,
mm-hmm.
you know, where, and I remember this with my wife. One Halloween, she went as a cat. She wore a cat, but she put painted whiskers on her face.
Right.
And when our son was about three, he saw her and freaked.
Uh-huh.
Just freaked. And it wasn't a scary face.
Nope.
It was just a couple of whiskers.
Right.
But it wasn't mom.
Her.
It
yeah.
wasn't. It sounded like mom, but it wasn't. And it seems like that's the Uncanny Valley
yeah.
on a very basic level.
That's two-year-old cognitive dissonance
yes.
right there.
I don't like this.
This is bad. Make it stop.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's perfect. That's exactly what it is. And I think that's what happens in the Uncanny Valley to us at a broader level.
So why is cognitive dissonance then so problematic for us? I mean, we like putting things in boxes. It seems
right.
like that makes sense. It makes our lives easier.
It
because
works.
90% of the time
We're
it
right.
works.
Yeah.
But what is it about the cognitive dissonance that makes us emotionally frustrated as opposed to, well, it's A or B. Couldn't we just put it in a bigger box of A or B?
Sometimes you can.
Okay.
But a lot of times the emotions get in the way. And they get in the way even in times where they shouldn't. And it's just fundamental to human nature. We hate being wrong.
Right.
How many arguments have you gotten into with your friends or watched your students get into? Hand shot first. Who cares?
Right. You have these discussions and it's like, I'm doubling down. I know I'm outnumbered, but I'm holding my ground.
And it doesn't matter.
Right.
But you have to be right.
Right.
And there are personality differences in this. There are people who are much more prone to this
some
than others.
Some people give up fast and some people really
but
double down.
As a species, as the intelligent primates we are, it's adaptive to be right. It's adaptive to have our predictions come out correctly. When they don't, I'm going to get et, I'm going to lose, I'm going to fall down the primate hierarchy, whatever. So we don't want to be wrong. We have a really deep emotional negative reaction to being wrong and also to uncertainty.
Right.
And again, you and I see this in classes all day long. What students want is, here are the facts, give them to me in a digestible form.
Right.
I can write them down, I can memorize them, and I can give them back.
Right.
I feel smart.
Right.
then you tell them that they're wrong, or then you tell them that they've misinterpreted a fact, or then you tell them, God help them, that memorizing the facts isn't really thinking.
Right.
And they look at you like a deer in the headlights, coupled, you know, somehow genetically coupled with a weeping baby.
Right. They just don't want to deal
with that. Yeah, it's terrifying, it's disturbing, we hate it.
So we like our own safe little worlds, and that type of uncanny valley that's not my safe little world.
That's not my safe little world.
So I don't want it here. You're listening to One Universe at a Time. I'm your host, Brian Korberlein. We've been talking with Dr. Grant Guthiel, Associate Professor of Psychology